wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Connor Rohr. We got Albert Breer here, and we're leading off the show talking about the Philadelphia Eagles, who strong-armed the Miami Dolphins on Sunday Night Football, 31-17. Every week you look for this one game, and I got another one after this that I feel like tells a tale of the week that's something sustainable, something that we can kind of flesh out throughout the entire season. And Albert, everyone's kind of wondering after this game, is it nice that Miami is the fastest football team alive? But what happens when they get into a little bit of a barroom fight, a jiu-jitsu battle, whatever you want to call this? Because the Eagles kind of handed it to them a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, I think what's interesting, and you got to go back and look at the Dolphins games this year, but I feel like this is sort of proving a theory I had earlier in the year true, that if you knock the Dolphins off schedule, they are just not the same team. And if you go back and you look at that game they had against the Broncos, where they scored 70 points, they didn't face their first third and long until their seventh touchdown drive. They didn't face their first third down period until their third touchdown drive. Well, what does that tell you? That tells you if you get them in third and long, you create negative plays, you put them behind the sticks, they're simply not the same offense. Well, why is that? It's because so much of that offense is based off play action and movement and motion. And once you get long yardage and you can start to, you know, make them play one way and they become more predictable, a lot of that stuff is null and void. And I know people have said over the years, oh, well, play action, you know, the run game doesn't really, it's not the run game that it is the run game. You know what I mean? It is the run game. That's 100%. What makes play action come alive. And I think you see the Dolphins, who are good at that sort of thing, at marrying the run and pass and, you know, making everything look alike and making run plays look like pass plays and making you defend the whole field. You know, so much of the effectiveness of what Mike McDaniel's been doing has been staying on schedule, you know, and that's a credit to him, by the way. That's not like a shot at him whatsoever. But, you know, I think you see a team that, you know, when, if you can get them behind the sticks, if you can create negative plays like the Eagles did last night, if you can put them in penalty situations where they're grabbing or holding, you can make them a different team, you know? And so I just sort of look at it, Connor. I look at the first couple of possessions and, you know, the Eagles were able to create long yardage situations, put the Dolphins in those long yardage situations, and the Dolphins were out of sorts. And as a result, they finished the game with 45 yards rushing, which is way, way, way below their average. And, you know, you can attribute it to whatever you want to attribute it to. I'd say, you know, their offensive line issues are certainly up there on the list. But, you know, in the end, I think it's sort of, if you can create negative plays against the Dolphins, you can make them a different team. And I think that's been the underlying thing to the whole season. As impressive as they've been, through the first 7 weeks of the season. I think that's the underlying thing. So what Buffalo was able to do a few weeks ago was what the Eagles were able to do on Sunday night.
Yeah, Buffalo's mission was to take away the first read, and you're seeing that a little bit now. Basically, I mean, I can draw a line back to when I saw New England kind of play them well, I believe it was last year, where now there's delayed action on behalf of defense on every down. And so Tua, what you're basically trying to do is you're trying to cover up the place where he's going first, and then all of a sudden, that's when you can find yourself in a situation where he's just a little bit uncomfortable. And I would say that that was certainly the case with sort of the back-breaking interception that the Eagles had in the fourth quarter that really turned the tide of this game. And then all of a sudden you just start muscling it to AJ Brown down the field. And that's the other place I want to go here, because I just think it's so interesting, Albert, that for years that we've talked about the effectiveness of the running game and what it does to opponents down the stretch. I would venture to say that the Eagles and the 49ers have figured out the evolution there, in that you almost want your pass catchers to have the same kind of ability where they can just beat up cornerbacks, they can run over safeties, and my argument is that's even more effective over the course of the season. And now you have AJ Brown, you have Dallas Goedert, you have some of these guys that are really kind of throwing haymakers down after down. It takes a lot of stress off of Jalen Hurts. It increases yards after catch, and I think I see the plan. I get it. It makes sense to me.
I mean, the touchdown to AJ Brown wasn't like this gigantic down the field play or anything, but he caught the ball over the middle of the field, and you knew he was getting in. You know what I mean? Like, I think he had what? I mean, he probably caught it with 6-7 yards to go. I'd have to look that up again. But, you know, he caught it with 6-7 yards to go, and you just looked at him, and you see, like, smaller people around him, and it's like he's getting in, you know? And it's amazing. I think this is his fifth straight game with at least 125 yards receiving, right? I mean, you talk about a trade that – change the complexion of a team. And it's not like they weren't a good team the year before. They were in the playoffs the year before. But, you know, what having a guy like A.J. Brown does, not only for Jalen Hurts, but for Dallas Goedert, for Devontae Smith, for DeAndre Swift, like for all the other guys in their offense, how he makes you choose. And you either choose to change the math and open things up for everybody else, or you put him in a position where not only is one guy going to have to cover him, but that one guy's going to have to tackle him too. And I just think he kind of, he's proven himself to be so valuable on so many different fronts because of the type of body he has, the type of runner he is. He's more than just a receiver. And, you know, I think you have to give Howie Roseman a lot of credit on that one too. I know we've talked about this over the last few weeks, but I think there's like a certain humility in Howie Roseman doing what he did there, in that it was the willingness to admit your mistakes fast enough to take advantage of an opportunity like that, you know, like where they in 19 drafted J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, I believe somewhere in the 40s or 50s, maybe even in front of A.J. Brown that year. I'm not sure, but it was right around the same range. Right. So they draft him. They draft Rager in 20. And instead of chasing their mistakes, they quickly recognize that they'd messed up. They trade up for Devontae Smith in 21. And then they go and get A.J. Brown in 22. Now, they very easily could have said, you know, okay, we've got Devontae Smith. We hit on that one. And, like, let's keep working with the other guys. But they didn't chase those mistakes. They recognized them fast enough so they could react and make a play for a player like this. And it's completely changed the face of their team. And, you know, here we are, Sunday Night Football, with a huge game between 2-5-1 teams. And I don't think it'd be a stretch to say he was probably the best player on the field last night.
Certainly. I mean, and I do think, too, a lot of the stuff we should save bigger reactions for the course of the season. I think Philly matches up against this defense particularly well. Like they are a little bit on the slow side, and they are also not very physical. And so I think this was Jalen Hurts's second easiest game, and I'm putting easiest in big air quotes here because it's never easy to play quarterback in the NFL, but second easiest right, in terms of the number of throws that he had to make under pressure. And so if Jalen Hurts has time, he's mobile enough to finesse his way into a situation where he can get AJ Brown open. Even if he's not, he can get Dallas Goedert open. And all of a sudden you're basically just plastering a secondary with, you know, fullback style hits down after down. And there we have it. So my big, but I will ask you one and a big sweeping question on Philly is, do you think that this team has shown you enough and has been steady enough to lead you to believe that they are capable of erasing a return to Super Bowl type curse?
You know, I'm really a big believer, and I become increasingly a big believer in that, like, the type of football that travels is the type that's played on the lines of scrimmage, and they are so good and so deep on the lines of scrimmage. I mean, you could argue, I mean, Connor, are they better this year than they were last year on the lines of scrimmage?
Maybe.
I mean, when you add Jalen Carter to the mix on defense and he looks dominant, you know, and like you have him as part of a rotation, and yes, they lose Javon Hargrave, so that's a pretty big loss. But, you know, I think you could argue that they may be a little deeper and a little better up front than they were a year ago, which seems like a crazy thing to say. But I think it shows up in a game like this. Again, like it shows up in that whole thing I talked about off the top, which is being able to stay on schedule, you know, and being able to create advantageous situations for your offense from a down and distance standpoint that you're never playing from behind. I think what sticks out about the Eagles most is like, they just never let games get away from them, you know? And I think that's a result of being as strong as they are at the lines of scrimmage, because if you're that strong at the line of scrimmage, you're not going to have a lot of negative plays on offense. Right. You're always going to kind of be able to stay steady on offense, and you're going to be able to create negative plays on defense, and you're going to be able to knock the other team off schedule on defense. So you're always going to have some level of control over the pace of the game if you're really strong in the lines of scrimmage. And I don't know. I mean, them and the Niners are probably the two best when it comes to what you've got up front. And I would argue the Eagles are probably better just because of the balance and depth they've got up front. Like, the Niners have big stars, you know, in, you know, now Hargrave, obviously Bosa and Armstead and Trent Williams, but just the balance and depth that the Eagles have across the board on the lines of scrimmage was awesome last year and helped carry them to a Super Bowl, and is awesome again this year.
Go from one Super Bowl contender to another. We had the Chiefs and the Chargers yesterday, and
no one talks about the Chiefs.
Man. I mean, all right. So let's back
I wrote this morning, though. They've entered Patriots territory, haven't they?
Oh, it's just
we're during the season. No one's wowed by them anymore. We sort of picked them apart a little bit. And then you look up and they're 6-1, three games up in their division. And the AFC West is over now, right?
I would say so. And it's always interesting, right? Because like the Patriots, there are about three or four ways where you can try to attack them defensively. And it's sort of a choose your card and see if you get hot kind of thing. And the Chargers went from, there was a play early in that game where they forced a bad Mahomes throw with some pressure and then nearly tipped the ball and got an interception. And then from that moment on, they didn't pressure him at all. This was the least amount that Mahomes was pressured in any game this season. And so you're just like, okay, you choose your poison. It was almost like a Bills game plan from the AFC playoffs a couple years ago where they never blitzed him. But the counter to that is that if you don't have the dogs in the secondary, Mahomes, almost like Jalen Hurts, but just in a different way, is just going to keep the play alive long enough, and he's just going to find somebody. And he will always find somebody. And so, lo and behold, we now have the biggest Mahomes game of the season, 424 yards, four touchdowns, one interception, 12 catches for Travis Kelce, 179 yards, and a touchdown.
Yeah,
this is as easy as it gets for the Chiefs, and it also puts the Chargers in, like, I don't know, I think they were in lukewarm water for a while, but I would sense that this is hot water. And it's so disappointing because they were in this game. They were in this game for a long time.
And I would say, like, you know, obviously more often than not, when you give Pat Mahomes that time, like, the guy he's going to find is Kelce. And, you know, like, it's sort of similar to A.J. Brown in a way that you got this big receiver running down the middle of the field. And, you know, like, give it enough time, he's going to get the ball and he's going to be really tough to bring down, you know. But what that does, and I think you see it with the way the Chiefs have played and who they are does, and this is something you saw with the Patriots when Tom Brady was there, is being this consistent and being able to kind of bleed out wins the way they're able to bleed out wins allows them to develop different parts of their team. And so, like, look at Rashee Rice yesterday, 5 catches, 60 yards. Like, they could have a rookie who's really functional at receiver by the end of the year. and it looks like they're getting there. Valdez-Scantling has a nice game. Like, you know, and everybody was kind of pulling their hair out about, like, do they have a number one receiver and do they have enough around Pat Mahomes? Well, Kelsey's their number one receiver, and they've got time to develop guys who they've drafted pretty high, or they signed to, you know, decent sized contracts in their receiver group. So they're going to be fine by January. And you're right. This was an opportunity for the Chargers. It feels to me like watching them, they feel the weight of what they're under right now. Like everybody in that operation, you know, like that there's a lot on the line for Brandon Staley. Kellen Moore gambled by going there. There's a lot on the line for him. You know, Justin Herbert, there are questions that are coming up on him that haven't come up before. It's just, they've been the lesser than the sum of their parts team for so long now that it is fair to start asking that question, right? Like, is there fundamentally something wrong with the way the team's built? Is it the coaches? Like, they should not be 2-4.
And that happens. I mean, that happens where, you know, and it's partially our fault. It's partially coaches' faults. It's partially GM's faults, where all of a sudden, you know, hype gets out of control and it gets to the point where it's unmanageable. In this case, I mean, just you look at the talent on paper and you would assume that someone could make this work. But I think the real failure with the Chargers and, you know, is in moments of attrition, right? Is in moments when you need resilience. Like, the Chargers were playing as well as I've seen them play all year through the first half of this game. And then all of a sudden, you know, Patrick Mahomes goes the length of the field before halftime, and then coming out of halftime, they didn't score right then, but he converted like a 3rd and 15 or 16. And then the following drive is when you had Justin Herbert in the red zone pick. And from there, forget about it. It's wilted flowers. It's done. And so for me, I'm just wondering, and we've seen this before with them, where as soon as the tide starts to turn in a game, all of a sudden it's like this collective panic. And maybe it goes back to what you're saying, where I think everybody kind of understands the cost. Everybody understands the cost of these mistakes. And it doesn't look good.
Yeah. And I think it's also, you know, it's fair to ask now that you got a quarterback on what, like a $252 million contract. Do you ask more of him? You know, like, should he be coming up bigger down the stretch of a game like this? You've invested a lot in around him, you know, like, you've invested, and I know Mike Williams is down and that's not an easy thing to recover from, but you still have, you know, a high first round pick at left tackle. You have, you know, one of the best receivers of the last 10 years, Keenan Allen there. You have Austin Eckler behind you. You have Quentin Johnston, a first round pick there. You have Josh Palmer, who you've developed. You know, I think, like, a lot, in a lot of cases, when quarterbacks sign those big deals, you're actually putting less around them. And I think Mahomes is going through that now, you know, with having to, you know, move on, with the Chiefs having to move on from Tyreek Hill. But, you know, I look down the stretch of this game, and where are the plays that Justin Herbert's making? You know, I mean, I'm looking at their second half possessions right now: interception, punt, 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 interception, right? And in those five possessions, there's 3 3 and outs. At some point, we have to hang some of that on the quarterback. And I tend to trust what people in the league tell me about these guys. And people in the league have always thought very, very highly of Justin Herbert. But it does feel like for some time it's been somebody else's fault. You know, it's been the injury's fault, or it's been Joe Lombardi's fault. It's always sort of been pinned on someone else. And, you know, I wonder where we're at right now, because I think some of the questions with Justin Herbert that existed in college are there now, if that makes sense. Like, some of the things about him being able to lift a team up and put it on his shoulders and perform in the biggest moments, and, you know, his personality and everything else, like, I think it's fair to kind of circle back on some of those and look at it, because in a big game against a rival with your season potentially on the line, you're 2-3 coming in, to have that sort of second half isn't good.
No, and in a situation, too, where it felt like there were things working. I mean, Josh Kelly was you know, you had the 50 yarder, but so it inflates the average a little bit. But every time they kind of did those little backside runs, it seemed like that they were finding some success. And I know I hate being that guy that's like, oh, if it worked one time, it probably is going to work all the time. I know that. But there's some stuff that you would be able to manufacture, it looks like. But I mean, I just saw that team straight up fall apart after that. And it's just so weird that they can be in games and then all of a sudden not be in games. Brandon Staley, when he was with LA, the Rams, was on a historical pace in terms of defensive, when he was the defensive coordinator, defensive second half points allowed. He was one of the best adjustment makers in the NFL. He was averaging like less than 3 points in the second half allowed. Now, the Chargers offense this year is similarly dubious because they are averaging over the last three games, Albert, 3.5 points in the second half.
And that's...
Which is pathetic.
I mean, it's hard not to pin that on the coaches, right? To some degree. Like, and I don't know. I'm just looking at their schedule now. I know this can be superficial, but you know how standalone games are kind of like digested differently, right? Like your standalone Monday night, Thursday night, you know, Sunday night games, right? The Chargers have two very winnable ones coming up in a row, their next two games. Sunday night at home against the Bears. And then the following Monday in New York against the Jets. If they lose those two in consecutive standalone games and look like they did in the second half against the Chiefs, like, I don't think we're there yet, like where the big time changes are coming. But sometimes these standalone games can cause an owner to feel some heat, you know? And I'd say that these next two games, again, winnable games against teams that might not have their starting quarterbacks. We know the Jets won't on that Monday night, and the Bears might not have Justin Fields on Sunday either. It's hard to imagine what the conversation on the Chargers is going to be if they don't find a way to win these next two.
Yeah. No, I agree. Speaking of difficult conversations, Baltimore 38, Detroit 6. Let me get into – let's back up for a second. I do the power rankings every week here at Sports Illustrated. I put the Lions 7. I didn't think that was a big deal. Turns out it was a very big deal. Lions
Did you get
fans,
dunked on?
Lions fans have 2015 Panther fan syndrome where all of a sudden their team is successful and then they turn into like these – paramilitary psychopaths and start saying like, we will stand against you. I was like, who? I don't even know. I was kind of trying to come up with like a good fake Twitter handle, but anyway,
I wish people knew how much time and effort I put into my picks. It's like 30 seconds every week. And they get so mad. People get so mad over it. It's like, dude, like I was reminded by Mitch, like at 9:57 on Wednesday, and I just filled out the spreadsheet.
So here's why I put the Lions 7th. And I think power rankings are a living, breathing thing. Sometimes you're good. Sometimes you're bad. And then at the end of the season, you try to catch the average. But one of the things that was
interesting. I don't know if I've asked you about this. What's your method? Are you an eye test guy? Or are you a resume guy? There's two separate things, you know what I mean?
So, I mean, you know, you and I spend time talking to people throughout the week. I like to weight that with some of what we see that's going on. So the perfect example here with the Lions was, you know, one of the coaches that was watching them, because everybody watches Detroit, because Ben Johnson's really good, was, hey, keep an eye on the Lions. You know, with David Montgomery down, they can't get into some of their bread and butter run concepts. And you saw Tampa Bay put some stuff on tape that looked good against Detroit. So you're wondering, can some better defenses take that stuff, manipulate it, utilize it, and force Detroit into some discomfort? Okay. So let's drop them from like 6 to 7 for 1 week to see how bad this really is, how hard this process is. And you would have thought that I burned the city of Detroit down. I got asked to go explain myself on talk shows for putting them 7th. You're in the playoffs. What are you complaining about? Anyway,
so first you get called on Boston Sports Radio for saying the Patriots are too good.
Big
and then you
for
get
the Patriots this weekend, by the way.
I know. We're going to get to that, right? And then you go on Detroit Sports Radio to defend yourself for saying the Lions are too bad.
But like seventh, you're one of the seven best teams in the NFL, right? There's eight teams every year that can win the Super Bowl. I'm saying they're one of the eight. I feel like if you're 13th, all right, I'll go on and I'll explain myself. I feel like I didn't have to explain this. Anyway, the Lions get the doors blown off them. And yeah, was I passively aggressively liking comments on Twitter the whole game? Yes, I was. And, you know, and this game proves nothing. This game proves nothing. This is what I said, right? You lost David Montgomery. You are unable to do some of your core concepts. You are learning and you are adjusting. Jahmyr Gibbs, this is a flight or fight situation now. And we're seeing him get force fed in the second half to see if he can kind of pick up and start to play a little bit better and carry the load here. That's going to take some time. Plus, the Ravens are like one of the worst teams in the NFL to face when you're in obvious passing situations consistently. Mike McDonald, their defensive coordinator, has been on a roll this year. His pressure package is one of the best that I've seen in the NFL this year. And they pin their ears back and they knock the Lions around. Okay. You know, that's fine. We're learning. This is how it goes.
This is this Ravens team is better than people think.
Way better.
This is like people don't pay attention to them and I don't know why. And maybe it was just the fatigue of Lamar Mania a couple of years ago. And, you know, they're not like maybe they're not the most exciting watch for the casual fan. And I get that. But like, this is a team that went into Cincinnati and won. This is a team that stomped the Browns. And now, you know, a Lions team that I think like legitimately is like a tough, hard-nosed team got just popped in the mouth. You know, like, and I just like look at like how complete this was. Like, so I talked to John Harbaugh last night about where his team is, and he was explaining how like they went through this reset and how, you know, the schemes on both sides of the ball, two relatively new coordinators, Mike McDonald in his second year, Todd Monken in his first year, are starting to take hold, and how like they feel like now they're starting to get the best out of every player. Lamar Jackson hit 9 different receivers yesterday. 9. And they ran for, I don't know, what was it, 150 yards, right? Threw for 350. At one point, I think the total yardage was like 336 to 4 or something like that. I mean, this isn't happening in an NFL game, you know? And, you know, at one point they had 4 touchdowns. The Lions had 0 first downs. So I think, like, you know, when you look at the championship experience the head coach has, you have a quarterback who for 2 or 3 years was in a really unsettled situation contract-wise. And I don't care what people say about, like, that's not a factor on the field. It is. Like, you have to be thinking of it, right? Like, if you're Lamar Jackson, there's no way you can't be at least – that can't at least be in the back of your head. Now he's able to go out and play free knowing the organization has his back. It's just I think, like, the Ravens are in a better spot than they've been at maybe in any point since Lamar got there. And maybe since the last time they won a Super Bowl. And, you know, I think that there's also this, oh, you forgot about us thing going on with them too, because every other team in that division at some point over the last calendar year got more attention than they did.
You brought up a really good point. And so I'm going to address that. But first, I just want to give I appreciated what you said about Todd Monken. I feel like that's what people are not talking about. Last year, through the first 7 games of the season, guess how many times Lamar Jackson completed more than 70% of his passes?
Through 7 weeks, you said?
Through 7 weeks last year.
0.
1. Okay. Guess how many games this year Lamar Jackson has not completed more than 70% of his passes.
Just for symmetry's point, I was going to say 1. You know, see, you screwed it up, Connor. I was trying to guess, and then you put your finger up in the Zoom. And I thought that's where you were going, but you didn't let me close the circle there.
There you go. But this is incredible. And you don't see Tigers change their stripes like this. But I think what we are seeing, Lamar at Louisville was his last 2 years averaged a quarterback rating around 150. Hmm. He was a accurate, high volume passer at Louisville. When Greg Roman got a hold of him in Baltimore, I think due to the immediate need to win, you turn him into a little bit of something else. I think Lamar then develops that habit where, okay, evade in the pocket, get rid of the ball later. Now he's playing in rhythm. He's playing in structure. And there are so many, you know, I talked to a QB coach who said this a couple years ago, that if you got every snap to look the same for Lamar in terms of 1-2-3 out, 1-2-3 out, he's going to be unstoppable. And watch the games this year. 1-2-3 out. Yep. Everything's in rhythm. You got him some receivers. You're getting him some quick completions. He looks like a different guy.
If you watched Georgia last year, you could see it too. Like how creative they were using Brock Bowers the last 2 years. Like, and I don't know how many of our listeners are aware of who Brock Bowers is. I think most of them might
be the villain in Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah. Like, so Brock Bowers is going to be a fun guy to talk about in the spring because he's about as versatile a tight end prospect. He's different, but he's about as versatile a tight end prospect as I've seen come in the league in my 20 years covering it. But you can see the creativity there. And that was why I was excited to see what this would look like. Because I do think when Monken went back to college, you know, from Cleveland and from Tampa, like there was an opportunity to kind of diversify what he was doing. And I think he took that opportunity, and I think you're seeing it now. And you know what's so cool about it, Connor, is so Lamar was involved in 4 touchdowns yesterday. All 4 of them were different, right? Yep. So there was the bootleg to the left, right? I think it was on 4th and 1, okay? There was the scramble touchdown where it looked like he made 4 different guys miss and found Nelson Aguilar in the back of the end zone. There was like the movement play where, you know, it's a sort of a sprint out and he's able to dump the ball in the flat, running out that way and influencing the defense to Mark Andrews. And then there was the one from the pocket where he stood in there and found Mark Andrews and just put a dime on him in the back of the end zone. 4 touchdowns, scored 4 very different ways. And that just tells me that it's a coaching staff that's now using every tool that Lamar Jackson has in his box, right? And having to defend that version of Lamar Jackson is going to be very difficult, especially if you can kind of, and I think they're doing this too, be judicious on how you use him as a runner so he doesn't get worn out over the course of a year. Because the offense he was playing in the last couple of years, now I want to give Greg Roman credit because that was about the most creative run game the NFL has ever seen, right? Like that was, I mean, you talk to defensive coaches and they would tell you what a pain in the ass it was to go up against the Ravens. So Greg Roman is no one's fool. But I do think that there was a toll that was paid for playing that way if you're Lamar. And I think they're able to maybe take a little bit off of him in that sense too. And so I see this as like being sort of Lamar 2.0. New contract, new coordinator, new offense, new weapons around him. And you see it yesterday. Scores touchdown 4 different ways, hits 9 different receivers. They're making everybody they face defend the entire width and length of the field. And that makes a guy who's as explosive as Lamar Jackson in so many ways so much more dangerous.
One more stat that follows that same line. Guess how many times... how many more times Lamar Jackson has run this year than he did last year through 7 weeks of the season, Albert?
How many more times has
Lamar Jackson run the ball this year through 7 weeks than he did last year through 7
He's
weeks?
Run more this year than last year? See, I wouldn't have thought that.
One more time, right?
It's the same. Okay, it's the same.
Yeah.
Okay,
same. But they're different.
So my perception was different. Yeah.
The rushes are different than they were.
Well, he's not running the Army-Navy offense where he's in between the tackles quite as much, I don't think. Doesn't seem that way anyway.
No. And let's close the book on this with one other Twitter-related controversy. I think that the real advice here for me is just to get off the platform, but the Ravens,
which has been the same advice for a decade now for all of us.
Seriously, the Ravens post a graphic after the game of all the expert picks. Yeah. And they're like, they said, "You guys sure about that?" And it says like Connor Orr, Sports Illustrated picked the Lions. John Plume, Sports Illustrated picked the Lions. We didn't pick the Lions. We picked the Ravens. I posted a screenshot of it and nothing. Crickets from Baltimore. So, I'm fired up.
I love like how like all these teams employ like these 23-year-olds whose job is to dunk on people. You know what I mean?
But then, like, but I dunked on you, and now
it's like we're gonna on one hand we're gonna send our coach up to the podium 5 days a week to say the blandest thing possible. Like that is his goal, to be as boring as humanly possible. And then over here we're gonna apply this. We're gonna hire this 23-year-old who has been involved in the NFL for 2 weeks, and his job is to viciously dunk on everybody on social media.
How much do you think the Chargers like cashing the checks that their social media team writes with that schedule release video every year? And then they're the ones that have to pay for it with their bodies when everybody gets pissed off and offended. You know, I'm sure that I'm sure that they absolutely love that. But anyway, it's all about engagement.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Another surprise one for me, Albert, was
all business is good business.
All business, yeah. The Patriots beat the Bills, and it's just like, what the hell? What? Like, I watched the game. I watched it again this morning, and I'm just like,
was there a part of you that was like, that was what I was talking about?
Well, yeah, and of course it happens. Like, so the timeline of events is: I publicly rescind my Patriots AFC pick. I admit the flaws in my process. And then all of a sudden, Sunday morning splash reports come out. Bill Belichick signed a contract extension this offseason.
So do you want to talk about that?
I want to talk about that. Let's talk about that.
I love Ian. Read the words. He never said extension. Now, somebody might have splashed it over his name or aggregated it incorrectly. He never said extension. And he also never said long term.
He said lucrative.
He said multi-year deal. So what's multi-year? If you're not saying long-term, you're saying multi-year. What's multi-year?
Two.
Okay. If you're not saying extension, it's just deal. What does that mean?
It was a reworked contract.
Reworked two-year deal, maybe?
Yeah.
So I'm just hypothesizing here. But if his report says reworked two-year deal, if that's the translation, then wouldn't the real news here not be that Belichick signed a new deal? It'd be that Belichick's going to be in a contract year in 2024, and that's normally when teams make decisions on their coaches. Mm. They usually don't take coaches. You know this as well as I do, right, Connor?
Sure.
Usually teams don't take coaches into contract years.
Unless.
So that's either that you know what or get no, off the pot. That's either you know what or get off the pot time, right?
Oh, how about that? So what?
I'm just saying, like, I don't think, like, good, like, those are hard contract details to get to. So good, like, good on Ian for getting them. But I mean, I would say that nothing has changed. Like, that's my perception of it anyway. Talking to people, I don't think anything has changed. Like, and I think, like, that was a great win they had yesterday. But, you know, I still think, like, you know, Robert Kraft is not happy with the state of his football team, the trajectory of his football team, where his football team's going. Now, that can change over the next 10 weeks, you know, but like, standing where it is right now, I would think if the season ended today, there would still be a lot of change coming in that organization. Again, that can change, you know, like, and there's 10 weeks, and I don't think that anything's going to happen in the middle of the year. But, you know, like, I would still say that, you know, one good afternoon against a team that basically crapped all over itself for a couple of quarters, you know, I don't think changes much of anything.
I want to know what happened to like yesterday. You had like DeMario Douglas making like diving grabs. Like Mac Jones looked like he knew what was going on. And this is a team that got pretty handily beat by the Raiders a week ago. And the Raiders team goes out and gets their doors blown off against Tyson Badgett. Like, what? Okay. What is happening?
I'm going to sound like a down and distance, like evangelist now, but do you know when the Patriots first converted third long came?
I don't.
It was the third and eight to Hunter Henry at the end of the game.
Wow.
It was. So it's interesting because like I've had this conversation before the Patriots and Dolphins played earlier in the year. I did like this Mac Tua thing, and Tua looked great, obviously, in week one. And I had a couple people tell me that they thought there wasn't an enormous difference between Mac and Tua. It was their situations and it was what was happening around them. And I think if you watch like the Patriots play, and if you listen to what Mac said, Billy O'Brien's doing a lot of things that we both know from Alabama now. He took some stuff I liked at Alabama and he put it in, right? With the movement and play action and all that different stuff, right? And then you think of how it's looked when Tua succeeded in Miami. And we talk about how successful the Dolphins were in managing situations and staying out of long yardage early in the year and what that meant for Tua. Well, then lo and behold, Mac Jones has a game where he's doesn't need to convert a third and long until the very end of the game to win. And what do we have? A much different Mac Jones. So I just think it's food for thought. Like I think it was Jordan Palmer. Someone told me like a few years ago, and I never really thought of it this way to distill it this way, but I think it's actually true. It's like elite quarterbacking is third and long. Elite quarterbacking is when you're down by 20, you know, elite quarterbacking is those sorts of situations where you have to be the best player on the field. And I think in some cases, like these games are really well coached offensively now. And you put these quarterbacks in these situations where they're not battling down and distance and where the coaches have the leeway to make everything look the same. Because on second and six or third and two, the playbook is wide open and you make things so much easier on them. And that's what I think happened with Mac yesterday. They were able to find him easy completions. They were able to manage the game. And Mac, to his credit, came up big at the very end. But when they're asking you to win the game on the final drive and just that one drive, that's a lot different than asking a guy to win the game on every play, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think what you saw yesterday was a much better managed game by the Patriots, and you had a much better quarterback as a result of it. So and now I'm the dead now I'm the down and distance guy. Yeah. I mean,
you're
I don't know.
There's a chance.
I mean, I don't know. Do you think the Patriots can replicate what the Eagles did to the Dolphins? Probably not, right? But they play the Dolphins this week, and if they beat the Dolphins, their schedule softens up after that.
Oh, why didn't I double down? This would have been such a good week if I doubled down.
So let's just play devil's advocate here, okay? So they, I think I have this right. So if they beat the Dolphins this week, then their next two games after that are the Commanders at home and the Colts in Germany. Then they have their bye. So if they beat the Dolphins, they're 3-5 with a shot to get to 5-5 in the bye.
Whoa.
Maybe you shouldn't have backed off, bud.
God. Of all the things that I thought I'd come to regret this year, how far down the list was that?
I don't think it's happening because I just don't think they're good enough. Let me be clear on that. Like, I don't think their roster is good enough to consistently win week after week after week. But, you know, I think I do think like part of where they are is their schedule was tough early, you know, and look, like I think they happen to catch a Buffalo team that's really not playing well right now. And I would say this, like this game on Thursday night, for some of the same reasons we just mentioned with the Chargers, like the whole dynamic of a standalone game, like the Bills playing on Thursday night against the Bucks, that's looming as a pretty big game for Buffalo.
Yeah. Yeah. They could get themselves knocked off the tracks a little bit, you know?
Yeah. And down in the power rankings too.
Jeez. I tried, people, you know, I try to make it special for you. Another bit of outrage, and then we're going to get to the lightning round here. This is the last thing I really wanted to get to. And yep. part of me thinks that this is a conversation we're having on a treadmill where we just keep going and getting tired and getting nowhere. But you cannot have what happened at the end of that Colts game happen. You can't. And it happened to the Steelers, and it happened to the Chiefs, it happened to the Jets this year. You want to put
a tinfoil hat on?
Oh, sure I do. But I would love that. Okay, so let me back up for a second.
The Colts, that was an illegal contact. Well, go ahead and explain.
Yes. So Browns beat the Colts 39-38. They score at the end of the game, but there is an illegal contact penalty that basically, like, Amari Cooper gets his thigh pad touched. And then on the following, I think it was like the next play or the play after that, whatever it was, the Browns throw the ball out of the back of the end zone. And then you get another pass interference on a clearly uncatchable ball. Here's how I know the second one was so bad, was because Gene Steratore on TV said, if I were on that officiating crew, I probably would have asked for a few more moments to discuss that call. That is the referee, because all referees stick up for each other. Yep. That is the referee equivalent of what a dog shit call that was. That is the meanest thing you'll hear a rules analyst say about an officiating crew on TV.
Yeah, Gene Steratore on referees is like Tony Romo on quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So here's my theory. Scoring's down. Games have been ugly, right? Okay. So, and we know, like, defenses are ahead of offenses. And I have my own theory on that too. Like, I think the cutbacks and practice time and contact and the addition of games in the place of that and guys not playing in preseason games, like, I think that that's a part of it, right? Like, that this is finally catching up with the league where it just takes longer to get for an offense to get its sea legs, and you're taking time away from the offenses, which is making it harder and harder for them to put themselves in a position to be at the highest level over the first month to 6 weeks of the season. And a lot of that is because the owners don't give a crap about trading off practice time or contact in practice so they can get more money from the players. So the owners want scoring. The owners don't like the fact that scoring's down, that quarterbacks aren't playing as efficiently, that their games are messy. So they had their league meeting last week. What's an easy way to get defenses to back off a little bit? What's an easy way to try and push it so passing games start to get in their rhythm?
Call defensive pass interference in the stands?
Have a couple weeks where you just start calling freaking everything. And you get these defensive players in a position where they are scared to put a finger on a receiver.
So dumb.
And then in a week or two, you know what? All of a sudden we got 7-on-7 again. So it's just a theory of mine, but these league meetings, you know this as well as I do, Connor, like, these league meetings, they have the competition committee come up and give them all the numbers on everything in the NFL, everything like scoring's up, scoring's down. This is up, this is down. This is the feedback we're getting. This is what we like, this is what we don't like. So they get all that, like, all the owners get that in one place at these meetings every quarter. And so their fall meeting was last week in New York. And suddenly we had a million, and I mean a million, ticky-tack pass interference and defensive illegal contact penalties in games that affected games. And I wonder if it's like a 1 to 2 week point of emphasis for the officials to try to make it so come 2 or 3 weeks, the casual fan gets their scoring back.
So dumb. It's just like, this is so far
but believable. But believable, right?
Incredibly believable. Yeah. It's just so far removed from the product that I think that we all fell in love with. And, you know,
some of the contact penalties were outrageous yesterday.
I mean, like, Donovan Peoples-Jones was not on the field. He wasn't in the field. You can't do that. You know, like, it's just, I don't know. It's outrageous.
But yeah, it did actually, like, the one positive to me was that it did allow for us to get a game that was legitimately won by an edge rusher almost by himself.
Right. Here's the other thing I want to talk to you about here.
Honestly, like, I talked to him after the game. That was like it's very hard for a player who's not a quarterback to put to like legitimately put his team on his back and carry it to victory. Myles Garrett like created like a 20-point swing yesterday.
Yeah.
If you add it all up, two touchdowns, two field goals.
Block field goal.
The block field goal, that leads to an easy chip shot field goal, right? Then you have the touchdown that he generated on the sack fumble in the end zone. Then you have the other sack fumble, which I believe led to a touchdown. And so, there's the two field goals, like the field goal swing, right? So that's 6-point swing. And then the two touchdowns, that's 20 points. Myles Garrett had a 20-point game.
Yeah. Now, after the game, Kevin Stefanski said that if P.J. Walker had been hurt, Deshaun Watson goes back into that game. And Deshaun came out of the game after he was a little beat up after just a horrendous interception. I mean, he looks awful on the field. He also looks hurt. So are we to interpret that from Kevin Stefanski as we don't have a better option and we probably just would have one-armed it Brock Purdy style? Or are we interpreting that as like P.J. Walker is better than like a 50% Deshaun Watson right now?
This thing is so sideways. It really is. I mean, it's just from the beginning, the way that it's been handled. And I'm trying to think now, like that Ravens game that like he was a surprise inactive for or whatever. Like that's what, 3 weeks ago now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because he had their bye. So, and that whole thing about him being cleared and then deciding not to play. And I mean, in those situations, the player is always going to look bad. I had heard this is a pain tolerance thing. I know players hate that term for obvious reasons because sure. It means it implies that they're a you know what if they can't go, right?
Sure.
And like, so this thing, like from a communication standpoint, feels like it's gotten really sideways. And the one thing that gives me like the feeling that it's going to be okay is like when you've watched Deshaun speak publicly, he seems okay with everything. But I don't know what's going on deep down. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know how he feels by the way all of this has been handled. And it's just it's a weird situation. And it's especially so because this is a team that's ready to win. You know what I mean? Like you watch the rest of this team. That's a good freaking team. And they've got, I would say, a top five defense now. They nailed their defensive coordinator hire. They've, you know, I think for the most part survived the loss of Nick Chubb. Not that it didn't hurt, but they can still run the ball without him. Jerome Ford looks good. Kareem Hunt's filled a role. I mean, everything about that team seems like it's pretty much ready to go. Like even Elijah Moore, they've gotten something out of Elijah Moore, you know? Like, so everything about that team seems like it's ready to roll except the quarterback position. So that's why, like, you look at it and it's like, God, like if they could get the Deshaun they got for that Tennessee game, you'd really have something here. But who knows if we're going to get that guy again.
Yeah. I'm going to leave it at that. I've had a lot of Deshaun thoughts. I think everybody knows where I stand on it.
Yeah, no, I know.
But you know, I just, you know, it's, you can't screw that up. And it's looking pretty screwed up.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right, let's get to the lightning round. A couple of games here. Obviously, Shepherd College, quarterback factory that it is. Tyson Badgett leads the Bears in a win over the Raiders. Am I even saying that right? Tyson Badgett?
I think it was Badgett. I thought it was Badgett. But I could be wrong, too. This is new for me, too. I think he was at the Senior Bowl, so I remember hearing about like the his arm wrestling situation, right?
Yeah.
His dad, yeah. So that was the, and then like I feel like he didn't hear a lot about him for the rest of the draft process. He goes undrafted, and yeah, I mean, good win for the Bears. The Raiders, man, I just, you know, sitting there at 3-3 now, and they beat the Packers and Patriots in succession. This feels like if you're the Raiders, this is one you have to have, you know, where it's a winnable game. Yes, it's on the road, but it's against an undrafted rookie quarterback. Your defense is playing really well. And to allow the Bears to run the ball the way that they did and to stop the run the way they did and control the game the way that they did. I know the Bears are playing better than they were at the beginning of the year, but this one I think is worse for the Bears, worse for the Raiders than it is good for the Bears.
They do this. I mean, they, you know, they had a couple good games and they lost to Jeff Saturday last year. It's just these kind of inexplicable little hiccups, which is, you know, it's why you can never really take this team totally seriously as a contender. Atlanta 16, Tampa Bay 13, Falcons are in survival mode here. I don't know. What was your takeaway here from this one?
I feel like the Falcons are almost like, it feels like they're playing like a four corners offense. You know what I mean? Like, and I think Arthur Smith is a master at managing the game. You know, it's just they've put Ritter in a place where they're asking him to do not a ton, and they've been very creative in the run game, and that's been enough. But, I mean, I feel like it still feels like the margin for error with Atlanta is very, very slim right now. Like they have to play a certain way to win. And to their credit, they were able to do it against a Buccaneers team that now is, what, 3-4? Right.
Yeah.
Going into Thursday night in Buffalo.
So Bijan Robinson had a headache. That's what he told reporters after the game. They said they kind of yanked him from that one because he's not feeling well. So nothing that it would seem to be like kind of a massive long-term deal, but you can see how that offense transforms when you get a little bit more singular in the run game, and Tyler Algier is great, and then you kind of mix in Cordarrelle Patterson, all that, but it's not the same, and so, you know, everything kind of regresses to the mean.
Correction, by the way, the Bucks are 3-3. I apologize.
Oh man, I just agreed with you because you sounded confident. I have a really bad habit of doing that. All right, Giants, Washington, a win for Tyrod Taylor. The Giants slowly just removing themselves from the Caleb Williams sweepstakes, which I don't know why you're doing that, but good for you. Get a 14-7 win over a divisional opponent. The Commanders kind of follow that similar Raiders path where they just look so good some weeks, and then they just completely lay an egg. The Giants, you know, didn't win the turnover. They won the turnover battle here, but didn't win time of possession. You know, this is not one of those classic control the clock Giants victories, but somehow Tyrod Taylor comes out of it, 2 touchdowns. No interceptions. Saquon Barkley gets 77 rushing yards, another 41 receiving yards and a touchdown. Okay. You know, I really don't know what to make of this. None of these teams to me are factoring in at all to the remainder of the NFL season in an important way, but I guess it's good for morale for the Giants to kind of get one off their backs there.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously this is a rebuilding year for them. My big takeaway would just more relate to what happened in Washington in the locker room after.
Right.
And Jonathan Allen kind of voicing his frustration, and I feel like this is a real crossroads game for the organization because, you know, like you have the trade deadline, and we're now, what, 8 days away from the trade deadline? And they were 3-3. Now they're 3-4. And they've got some pieces that would be of value to other teams on that roster. And they're in that awkward position of having a general manager, a personnel executive, and a coach, and Martin Mayhew, Marty Herney, and Ron Rivera, where you're not sure if they're going to be there next year. So how do you handle the next week? And you look at their roster too, and they've got, you know, Montez Sweat and Chase Young are both in contract years. You only have one franchise tag. Chances are you're not going to sign either of those guys to an extension before the end of the year. So now it's like you only have one tag, which would mean you probably let one go in free agency. Don't you have to think about trading one of them if this yep. isn't the year, right?
Yeah.
Because you could probably get something valuable for one of those guys. And so I sort of look at this as like one of those situations where it's like, if you're the owner, do you come in and order a guy who knows he might not be there in 4 months to trade one of his best players? I don't know. But yeah, I do know, like if I'm another team, they are now on the list of teams there with the Vikings and the Broncos and the Panthers, of teams that I would call right now if I were looking for some help at certain positions.
If I were Martin Mayhew, Marty Herney, I'd say, cool, I'll do whatever you want. Give me a 2-year extension. That's, I got to make sure I got that in my back pocket. The Steelers moved to 4-2 with the win over the Rams. I thought there was no way Pittsburgh was winning this game. I mean, they had to travel cross country. They don't typically, like, Steelers travel less than almost any team in the NFL on a year to year basis. And, you know, you figure, oh, they're not going to be able to travel well. Darrell Henderson is back for the Rams, and the Rams have kind of reshaped this run game. They've had everything kind of motoring a little bit. This is going to be kind of one of those games. But no, I mean, this is one to me that the Rams had to have. If they wanted to stay relevant in the playoff picture, he dropped this one, and that hurts him.
It was a carbon copy of the Steelers win over the Ravens too.
Yeah,
you know, like it was a carbon copy. It was the Steelers get outplayed for three quarters, they get their crap together in the fourth quarter, and they blow the other team off the field. And I think seeing how Kenny Pickett came alive late in the game was impressive. The big play to Deontay Johnson really got them going. And then to consistently make plays, you know, with George Pickens down the field was really encouraging. You're seeing, I think, the young core of that team start to kind of come together. And, I just think, like, you can see the talent there that they've got on that roster and where that could be a really tough team to deal with by the end of the year if those guys keep growing. So, yeah, I think it's another example of, like, a young quarterback in Kenny Pickett, who we were all asking big picture questions about after a month, is now showing some real growth in big situations. So I think the Steelers have a reason to come out of that encouraged. And then I think for the Rams, like, this is a reset year for them. We knew that, right? You wonder if the depth thing starts to catch up with them now.
Probably.
They're carrying all that dead money. You know what I mean? Like, they're carrying $75 million in dead money. And generally with teams like that, you'll see, like, towards the end of the year where the corner cutting they had to do to make it work with less money to spend on the team starts to catch up to them as injuries start to set in. So it's going to be an interesting few weeks for the Rams coming out of this one, where they go from here.
Great Kenny Pickett stat line, 8 carries, 0 yards, 1 touchdown,
long Love it.
Of 2. And they put a no passing touchdowns.
He had 8 carries for 0. That's like seems almost impossible because they don't count sacks in a quarterback's rushing yards, right?
So it's amazing. It's amazing. 17
to 25. I'm going to have to go back and review the tape on that one.
Yeah. 17 to 25, no touchdowns, no interceptions, and you put up 24 points on a defense that has Aaron Donald.
Was it like a bunch of failed tush pushes that I missed or something?
Maybe. It's just absolutely phenomenal. I love the Steelers. I want them to, you know, I don't want anything to ever change.
I love Mike Tomlin too. He said something after the game about he said something like What just happened isn't applauded, it's required, but I want to make sure that it's recognized. Phenomenal.
Good God. All right, very quickly here, the Seahawks beat the Cardinals. Okay, if you didn't have that one, I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure what to tell
Cardinals
you.
Cardinals still playing hard, though.
Sure, yeah. I don't know what we say. What else you say at this point?
I mean, I feel like we say the same thing with the Cardinals every week. They're really hanging in there, but they're not falling. This is like ideal, isn't it, if you're Arizona? You're not falling out of the Caleb Williams sweepstakes whatsoever, but you're showing a lot of effort week to week, you know?
You're orchestrating the bare minimum of competitiveness so that,
if you get to –
you get if to come back next year.
If you were Jonathan Gannon, would you just be trying weird stuff in the fourth quarter of every game?
All these coaches should be, but they don't. You know what I mean? Like they should use this as a kind of an experimental ground, but I do see
this would be the ultimate opportunity to do it where your team's playing really hard. It's like, hey, let's see what works, you know?
Yeah.
This is the chance to do it.
One highlight here was a touchdown catch by a man named Jake Bobo. One of the best catches I've seen.
Concord, Massazone. He's from the town over from me. It was the fertile football breeding ground of the Metro West suburbs of Boston.
Of
Concord, Massachusetts. Own.
If you would ask me where he was from, that's where I was going
to
guess.
Went to the same school as Jonathan Kraft's son.
Ah.
Belmont Hill. Yeah.
There you go. Packers lose to the Broncos. Couple takeaways here. Russell Wilson had a big run in this game. Again, like he's 20 to 29. Like he is getting better, but he's also just becoming a more efficient version of what he was in Seattle. And again, that's not the player that he was trying to be last year. The Packers just look lost. And I noticed that when you're doing throwbacks, a lot of throwbacks, like I felt like the Patriots were doing that a lot towards the end of the Tom Brady era, where they're just like, I don't know, let's just throw it to the wide receiver and then have the wide receiver throw it to someone else. And feels like that to me is sort of a red flag.
A last resort.
Sort of a last resort. And then for AJ Dillon to be your leading wide receiver, I'm not talking about your leading rusher. He shouldn't be your leading rusher either. But when he's both, you got some problems. And
I hadn't looked at this before now. Like, holy crap. Like, so they did go to 10 different receivers. The yardage, 30 for Musgrave, 27 for Watson, 22 for Jones, 21 for Reed, 34 for Dillon, 30 for Dobbs, 8 for Wilson, 17 for Wicks, 3 for Torre, and 2 for Sims. Holy crap. That is the weirdest looking box score I've ever seen.
And then Jordan Love kind of has it's sort of the game. I don't know what you want to call it, but just the, well, first of all, it's
well, the second down throw to finish it was really weird how he just threw it into a team meeting. You know, I don't know. I think it was second and 20, right? But that was, that whole thing at the end of the game felt strange.
And one of your touchdowns,
it was actually third and 20. I apologize, not second 20, but still.
And your touchdown pass comes, one of your touchdown passes comes by the absolute grace of God on an on a play that's tipped in a very dangerous area right into the outstretched hands of a wide receiver. So this offense, if it's possible, was better on paper than they were in this game. So that's weird times for the Packers right now.
Yep. And I'm with you at the Broncos too. I think Russell Wilson's been fine. You know, he has not been the problem. Is he worth going forward with at $50 million a year? That's a different question entirely.
Sean Payton said it himself. Caleb Williams is worth tanking for. He better get on it, though.
This isn't going to help.
I know. The Bears are going to run away with this thing. All right. Thank you, Albert, for everything, as always. Thank you guys for hanging with us today. Apologize for some of the technical difficulties here. When you leave your computer bag in someone else's car, all of a sudden, all of your recording equipment goes with it. But next week, we'll be on our stuff, and be sure to stay tuned for the Matt and Gilberto show on Thursday.
Apologize to Shelby too for the for our weekly mishaps with technology. Me and Connor, I will fall on the sword for it.
Our producer is an absolute saint. Every time we come to tape the podcast like we've never done it before. Can you tell when but anyway, Albert, you're the best. See you next week, and stay tuned for another great week of football, guys.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL Schedule Release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule-release to learn more.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.